this is way more convenient. Look, getting to a provider, a therapist, is still hard.
It is.
Finding one is still hard. And a psychiatrist, good luck. Good luck if you want to see somebody in 30 days. We're booking patients actively right now with our psychiatrists. So how does that happen? It's because the logistics of care, because we are agile. We can book our appointments closely. We don't have somebody whose car broke down, like none of that stuff.
Welcome to the Lion's Den, hosted by Lance Bachman.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Den this week. I got Greg Golan, the founder of Spotlight Health, and literally took it from a $0 company to over $1 million plus company at the very beginning of COVID. Greg, congratulations. I know you're in other organizations too, but it's all telemedicine, and you built it from zero to over $1 million plus in literally 18 months.
Yeah,
pretty impressive.
There. Yeah.
So, Greg, tell everybody who you are. Welcome to the Den. I appreciate you being here, my friend.
Well, I think you summed it up. My name's Greg Golan, and I'm one of the founders of Spotlight Health. We also have some other companies in healthcare, but that's really our main focus right now.
And it's all telemedicine. So you have a partner, your wife.
Correct. Partner. I mean, I have a boss, my wife. The brains, we call her.
God bless you. So how do you think, I mean, it's all mental health that you're dealing with, right? You have therapists, you have registered nurses, you have psychotherapists. You can actually write scripts through telemedicine, correct?
That's right, yeah.
Can you kind of tell the viewers what you do, what makes, because you own CopyLink, right?
CareLink.
Yes, you own CareLink. And that does all case management, totally something different and totally not even close to what you're doing now. Can you kind of tell us about it?
Like to back up a little bit, CareLink was a company that we founded about 5 years ago. It does case management, right? And case management, or what's also called support coordination, you're coordinating benefits. So when someone's enrolled in a certain program, like a Medicaid program, they receive certain things. And our job is to help them decide on those things, because everything in Medicaid is consumer choice. So we help direct them if they don't know. We also help to oversee those services. You know, in that program, a specific program we work in, the patient really is committed. They're committed to it, because if they're not, they lose those benefits that they depend on. You know, in my own personal story, my parents had gotten ill. So okay. Right around the time when we founded CareLink, and knew nothing really about healthcare, definitely not about commercial insurance. So okay. A lot more specialty in Medicaid and areas like that. My parents weren't those consumers. They were commercial. My father was a vet. So understanding what they receive was one part of it. So in a commercial world, they don't receive case management services, nothing like the Medicaid world. That was first. Second, you know, just thinking like, you know, somebody to handle the logistics of their care. So in Medicaid, I don't think people understand fully how well-baked those programs are. The logistics of their care, how it's working, monitoring, what we call critical incidents when something happens to someone and their care is going to need to change. All those things are very, very well accounted for. Ironically, in the commercial world or even the Medicare world, not the same thing. Not the same thing. So we really saw a gap in those logistics of care. Really, that chain of custody. When you go to see your PCP and you're sick because of this and you need a lift or you need some help at home, something like that, you're just kind of cast out there to figure it out. When you're talking about seniors, you're talking about people that can't, they don't have the same grasp on technology, all those challenges. So, you know, we lived it. The other piece was, so the first thing we did when my parents really got ill, like most people, we found out that they had been going to the hospital frequently and ambulance rides like a month or two after. You know, and you're thinking like, why wouldn't they just tell me and my siblings we could help?
Yeah.
You know, and that's where it really, really, really struck myself and my wife that it's the mental health piece of it. So, you know, you've got that codependency or co-support. And if they're both sick, especially at the same time, or they're both elderly, you know, they don't want to lose their independence. They don't want to be put in a nursing home. There's all these things that happen. And then they're medicated. And then there's the guilt. And like, you can name all these things, right? Depression. Anxiety.
So you built that to 100 plus employees. Some things changed here in the state of Pennsylvania. You're down to 40 there. But you literally bounce back. And what I like about your story, that's why I really want you on here, is you're not a healthcare guru. You literally started, you're a businessman. You just are changing out the widgets, right? You used to own AT&T stores. I mean, you had a big track record. So do you look at business all the same? You manage from a P&L, you manage from...
Like, well, when I say I manage it the same, I think, you know, it's like a dirty word in healthcare to say that you have what we call a commercial mind, right? Or you're a commercial person. And myself and my wife, that's what we are. We're commercial.
If it don't make money, it don't make sense.
Right. Well, also in the spaces we've worked in, the consumer drives your revenue, period. And we've been in competitive spaces. Our DNA is to compete and win over the consumer, which I think we could all admit doesn't exist in healthcare. If you don't like your doctor, like, too bad. You know, who are you going to get in to see, or who, you know? So you don't, you know, you feel like you have choice, but you really don't, not in the same way.
If you like this content and you're trying to grow your business, follow me at Lance Bachman and Lance Bachman Digital on Facebook, LFG, time to grow. Doctor's office, I say this all the time, is the only place that you could be late for an appointment by 10 minutes, they'll cancel you, but yet they'll make you wait an hour and a 100%. Half to get in.
Yeah.
So it's the lunacy, but we're willing to accept that until we change that, because it isn't hard to change a doctor. It's actually easier now.
No, it is. It's just, you know, are you going to run into the same thing, right?
No doubt. But I think that is going to change over time when people realize doctors are no different than a retail. Dentists understand that already.
Yes.
Dentists got it. Dentists used to be like doctors, where you go to a dentist appointment, you'd wait an hour.
Yeah.
That don't happen no more. They're taking you right back.
See, like what we look at things like, what are your challenges in a commercial business, right? It's acquiring your consumer, right? But the other is your staff. And we really look at ourselves as staffers. That's something. So CareLink, we did an acquisition a few years ago where we had to double the size of our staff in like 60 days. We did it. We did it with promoting from within, creating those opportunities, because staffing isn't hard. It's really not hard. You just have to understand. I know.
In this day and age.
You know what? We have not, even though we were talking a little earlier and I was saying, you know, supply and demand, but comparatively, we don't struggle there.
Compared to your competitors.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. You know, we're able to hire. We empathize with our staff. We create an environment that's going to create a better work experience. And it doesn't come with a four-day work week. It comes with, who are you dealing with, right? So if you're dealing with patients or you're dealing with selling them a shirt, do you want these people to be pissed that you're dealing with all day, right? Or do you want five people in line all trying to return something and you can't deal with them? They're going to be pissed. You're having a miserable time. You want to do something else. It's the same thing with clinicians. Like, clinicians need to be able to work, and the people coming to them can't be pissed off by the time they get in the door, right?
I agree with that.
So you know, we have these sayings at all of our operations. We make decisions the same way. The first question we ask is, how does this affect the consumer? So are we going to get new coffee in the office? How does it affect the consumer? We literally say that. It doesn't, right?
Yeah.
How does it affect the staff? They love it. And the next thing is, how does it affect the business? If the first two are good, the third is always good. So that's how we make every decision. That's why we can hire. That's why because the decisions we make, say, in our practice are, you know, is it a commercial decision that someone has to wait on hold for a half hour because you only have one person at the front desk? Grow the top line. If you want to grow the top line, you got to have three people at that desk and cast a bigger net, right? So I'm throwing this all around, because this is our commercial experience making healthcare better for everyone.
But most people don't think that with healthcare. Most people will have you one person for 500 phone calls and not think twice.
That's a commercial decision. And then that leads to a poorer customer experience, which it's the reverse jet engine.
So let's talk about this. People think about mental health, mm-hmm. that you would actually go and see and talk to somebody in a room, sit on the couch. You actually have a complete opposite model. You're doing it straight through Zoom, Skype, FaceTime, whatever it may be, telemedicine. I mean, is it impersonal, do you feel? Do you feel like you're getting good results? I mean,
So how do we make decisions, so right?
Yeah, I'm just curious.
First question, how does it affect the consumer, right? And we continually and will continually monitor our patients and our providers. We want to hear from them. I wouldn't say it never happens where we have a patient saying, I want to see someone in person, but the vast majority feedback is this is way more convenient. Look, getting to a provider, a therapist is still hard.
It is.
Finding one is still hard. And a psychiatrist, good luck. Good luck if you want to see somebody in 30 days. We're booking patients actively right now with our psychiatrists. So how does that happen? It's because the logistics of care, because we are agile. We can book our appointments closely. We don't have somebody whose car broke down, you know, like none of that stuff.
It's either I'm connecting or I'm not connecting.
That's it. And if they're not, like, there's a myriad of ways for us to do that. Although Zoom has been a great help, you know, like there, you know, people talk about the different telemedicine experiences and they think that telemedicine's that video connection is the same thing. It's not. I think you could attest to that, right? The code matters, right?
It does.
So it took us a little bit to figure that out. But to answer your question, the anonymity of mental health, it has always been an issue.
And it's only grown since COVID. It's all you hear about. It's just.
But do you want to walk it? Do you want to go to the mall and see a pad site that's Joe's House of Therapy and walk in there and all your friends are driving by seeing you?
No.
Even though it's nothing to be embarrassed about, right?
I mean, I never realized till I was older, and now I'm a father, and I see so much around me of mental health. I always thought mental health, I'll be honest with you, like, oh, you're crazy, you're a loony. That's not the case at all.
Yeah, or like self-help, right? Like, you know, you got to fix your shit, right?
I don't think everyone can do that. I think some can.
No. That's my point.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Yeah.
So like if I go way back to my background, my family was in the meat business for three generations. That's where I grew up. I grew up in that world. And so it's kind of interesting where I ended up, where it's you're going to be happier, more successful and stronger with seeking the help you need.
Well, I say this to everybody, when you learn how to play football, it's normally a football coach teaching you. When it's a wrestling, it's a coach teaching you. I look at therapy for a lot of people, and they're afraid to say it, is you're going to see a coach. Someone that knows.
That's a good analogy.
I hate to say it. Because
they have tactics, right? They're going to teach you how to stand to swing
the right way. They're going to teach you, hey, you're feeling depressed. Maybe you didn't take your meds right. Maybe you're feeling depressed. Why are you depressed? You really feel depressed.
Your physiology's changed, right?
Yes.
5 years you've been on that. Like, you know, there's new technology, new drugs out.
How has COVID changed your outlook and how you run your business with? So you're straight telemedicine. You don't take any in-person appointments, correct?
Correct. You know, we did not found this company to start a telemedicine mental health practice. That's not we developed this company before COVID, but it launched during COVID. You know, the telemedicine aspect was actually a convenience for us to allow primary care physicians to have an integrated solution into their practices. So people go, or at least the theory is, and a lot of payers feel this way, that people go to their PCP for everything.
And so in case someone that knows that is, tell them primary care.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Primary care physician. Listen to me. Like I'm a clinician and I like know what I'm talking about. But, you know, a primary care physician, They're looked at from a payer perspective for a lot of these, the way medicine works, as the quarterback, because that's what you're going to do. You're going to go to them. I think that's changed. I think technology has enabled people to take ownership instead of always just go to your doctor. You know, you got this pain over here on your left knee, like go to your, people are looking up orthopedic surgeons directly. They're doing a lot of this stuff. You know, mental health from a payer perspective really is focused on your primary care physician. You're going to go to them and then they're going to source you out. The reality is those primary care physicians don't have time to do any of that stuff. They barely have enough time to treat you because of all these things being piled on them that they have to do. So there are a few collaborative care providers, and that's what that's called. Collaborative care is when you become integrated into a PCP's practice. You know, that's where we originally set off. But
you know, it's funny. Most people don't realize their primary care physician, and I heard this from a primary care physician, said in a day, he has to see 50 to 60 people a day to pay for himself. That's the expectation.
I don't want to like get into this whole complicated payer matrix, but there's a reason for that.
But think about that. 50, you think about this. You start seeing patients at 9.
It's intense. But like, they're being pushed
stress,
that way.
I know, but the stress, I went away from a primary care physician. I use a concierge service now.
Sure.
Because
you see, but you just hit on it. So the PCP that sees that many patients in a day.
There's no way you pay attention to you.
Well, they're being pushed because of the payer matrix. The way insurance works and cost and what we call utilization, which is the spend. And really utilization, they can predict it somewhat to a certain point. But when you ascend it, it's called. Mm-hmm. So later in life, when there's things, we can't tell you when you're going to have trouble with things, no right? Doubt. So a payer, an insurance company, they're going to pay out about 20% of the premium in fee for service, we call it. That's mm-hmm. those doctors seeing that stuff. Mm-hmm. But where they want people to go is what's called risk. They want what they refer to as accountable medicine. Accountable medicine is based on outcomes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's great that your doctor's trying really hard, but I think we've all had experiences, and I would look at my parents' experiences as one of the biggest, is that, you know, not everything was done the right way. There was a lot of pain involved, there was a lot of suffering involved that didn't have to happen because those logistics and care aren't there. If you shift that dollar more to the PCP with risk involved. If you're a poor clinician, you're going to go under. But if you're a good clinician, you're going to make way more than you would have ever made in fee for service now and before. So those payer matrices exist. There's big practices that are in them and they're doing great. They're providing care, which is accountable. They are accountable for the care. The doctor that's seeing that many patients that isn't in a risk-based contract, you know what? Move on over. You're going to have to invest. You're going to have to utilize the technology that's going to allow you to deliver care.
Do you think social media technology has helped or hurt for mental illness?
I think this is not a clinician. No, this is my personal opinion.
You're a father. You're a human being.
It has hurt it. In a huge way. I think for that, I'm sure you touched on it for a reason. That younger population is greatly affected by it. It's important, I think, to have acceptance of challenges like mental health. It's not okay to romanticize it. And it's almost like being a part of a club sometimes, it seems.
I know you got to see that every day.
We see it every day. We see the struggles, and the pediatrics and the kids. That's the tough one. You know, it's tough for everybody because you know the adults are influencing their families and whatnot. But it's really hard. And I'm a helper, right? I'm a fixer. That's my job, is to fix shit. Like, and we started Spotlight to fix something. So seeing something that I just have to come to terms with, not being able to just fix. You know, it was something for me to deal with.
You are dealing with a lot of kids, you know, mm-hmm. teenagers. What does a good therapist or employee at yours, what are you looking for? Because I know what I'm looking for, good people. What are you looking for? Because they got to have a different mindset because you guys are prescribing drugs. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming you're dealing with people with a lot of anxiety, depression.
Yes.
What do you look for?
So in the team... You know, it's funny. It may seem like a lot of employees, but it's really not. And until we get to a certain stage, I actually hire everybody. So I make the first phone call and I call people. So I have this whole like process in hiring. And one of them is...
Well, tell us, because people right now are trying to hire. We want good people.
Like, how am I going to hire? No, I'm kidding. It's not a secret. It's like, you know, depending on when I get an inquiry... I don't do this whole song and dance of multiple interviews and reaching out. And are you free a week from today? I mean, I get on the phone and call. Hi, I received your resume. Do you have a moment to talk about it, or you want to like schedule a time? Is now a good time? And then I talk to them. And when someone is right on paper, then they're right on paper. So like, what's the other half? I actually sell people on working for the company. And what it does is it takes somebody who might be nervous and not interview well, or somebody who may be waiting for you as a company, kind of evil empire stuff to come in, you know, I really try to start on the highest note I possibly can. So I have a sales background too. So I qualify them. I ask them those questions like, why are you looking to leave where you are? And I know what the answer is. There's no growth, or they don't give me what I need to do my job. And I just go down this path of questions that I know the answers to. And then I tell them about our company. But they're their answers of what they're looking for. I don't start off saying, well, we're this new company and we're growing and we're saving the world. We're doing all this great stuff and we promote from within and like all the stuff, you know, people are looking for. So I would say that I'm looking for people that give a shit, right? Because what we're doing is we are treating people clinically.
No doubt.
So when I say give a shit, like you would think that's a no brainer for a psychologist or, you know, it's not.
I think a lot of people don't care. I think they go through the motions of life.
Yeah. I don't like parting ways with staff, but I'm mechanical. You know, I try to work with them too. But if they're not going to be right for this, they're not right, and they're going to have to go somewhere else. I'm sure they'll find a better practice to work with that'll be a better fit for them and all that. The people here have to be ambitious. So ambition is what I really look for. I don't want someone saying, you know, I really want like this. Nobody works 50 hours a week for us. They work 40 hours a week maximum. You know, I have a realistic view on how much someone should work. It's got to be fair. They're not the owners of this company. Like that's for guys like us to work all night and all day. For them, it's got to be reasonable, but they got to be ambitious. If they're ambitious, they drive us.
No doubt.
They drive the whole practice.
Here's a question for you. What would you tell someone that is dealing with mental illness? They know they have a problem, mm-hmm. but it's a negative state, like a negative persona out there about it.
Yes.
What would you say to them about seeking help? Is it private? Can people see that you're seeing you? Is it?
It's 100% anonymous. What they do with us, you know. When people finally get to us, they're typically at that. They've gone through those stages. I wish there was a way to engage people earlier because this way they don't have to go through that pain and progression. And when they finally seek help and they see, wow, it is totally anonymous. It is totally convenient. It is not judgmental. You know, they're not going to talk to me about a marital problem I have and take my side and then bring in my wife for a co-session and then, you know, tell her how hard, and then I'm divorced. You know what I mean? Like it can't be one side or the other. So therapy, like you said, it's like teaching you how to swing a golf club. There's tactics you use to uncover and work and progress. That's what our job is to progress.
You know, on the final roar, and I'm going to switch it up for you because you own multiple businesses now over your lifetime.
Yeah.
What would you say to that young person that might not think college is for them and they want to own their own business, mm-hmm. or someone just wants to own their own business? What would you say to that young person about the risk versus reward?
The first thing I'd say is the reason to go into business, I hear I hear on occasion people say things like, I don't want to work for someone. I want to work for myself. Like, that's not a reason. You need to have something you're trying to accomplish that's going to fulfill you. And it doesn't have to be, I want to save the world. It's, you know, you have to be driven to do it. The other thing is there's a lot of haters out there in every sense. Like, you know, when you want to buy a boat, you're going to find 100 people that, oh, buying a boat is, it's a hole in the water. You pour money into, you know why they're saying that? Because they don't know anything about it. And they're terrified to get a boat. Mm-hmm. You can get a $20,000 boat or a $20 million boat. You know, there's a lot of boats out there. So it's the same thing. Going into business for yourself, you really have to hear people but not listen. I think that's what I would say. There's a big difference.
Well, it's funny. So I always say this to people. I got a long line of haters. Line up with them because everyone don't give a shit what you think or what you say. Mm-hmm. And I'm damn sure not taking advice from someone that's never owned a business.
True. But even those that own a business, a lot of these guys are going to look at your success is now some kind of judgment on theirs. So if you're more successful.
Yeah, but I think if you're hanging with the right people, well, they want you to be successful. If you're hanging with the right guys, they want you to be
successful. You got to filter through.
I can tell you this. I want everyone to surpass me. You want to know why? Because more people that are going to hire my company, I'm going to grow.
Well, I also think you're probably self-aware, and you are confident. You're confident. So that's what it comes down to. When someone is going to discourage a young person and say things like, "Ugh, you know, it's a lot to do," or "You got to be capitalized the right way," that is a lot about that person. But granted, like, these are all things you got to figure out. But I can't tell you how. I told you I started my first business when I was 24.
With probably no money.
No money. I had bought a condo in Jersey like 3 months before. And the first month, I made more money than I ever did. And the second month, it cut in half. The third month, not a dollar. And like, I almost lost my house in my first one. So there's been a lot of them. Some have been great. But you got to do it, because now it's imprinted.
This is what I say to people all the time. And my wife told me this. There's always somebody with a bigger house. And I tell my sons, you don't compete with anyone but yourself. And I constantly say that to them.
I don't compete. Like, I think there's a difference. I think competition. And again, I don't look down on some people, that drives them, competing. I don't compete. I'm driven. So I can't believe I'm doing what I'm doing. I really can't.
Well, you're building great companies. And most, just so you know, you're in the top 1% of America, because only 1.8% of all businesses will reach over $1 million ever.
Well, that's amazing.
But the thing is, you should know that. You should, but the problem is, I said this the other day to somebody, everybody wants to be the next Facebook. Everybody wants to be the next Google. Everybody wants to be the next big Tinder, Grindr, whatever. People forget the American dream was to come here, have a home, have a nice life. There's a great amount of money in the small business sector. A great amount of money.
Yeah.
Go pick it up. Go take it.
I just can't believe I'm not going into the freezer at 2 o'clock in the morning to load the meat. You know, because that's a reality for me. You know, like, this is what I get to do. Are you kidding me?
I get to
be clean and not dirty.
Well, congratulations on all your success, Greg. I appreciate being on.
Yeah, look, thanks for having me.
Spotlight Health, pretty cool. All telemedicine. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you.